Welcome to A Duty to Act podcast, the first responder survival guide for performance, resilience, and happiness. I'm your host, Jennifer Darling, and I'm here today with Rebecca and Bill Dane. Rebecca and Bill are a married couple, both providers with a long history, and I want to find out what their secret is and see what we can learn from them. So I'm going to ask you guys to introduce yourself in the context in which you're here. And Rebecca, let's start with you.
I'm Rebecca Dane. Bill and I have been married for 27 years, and I work at Mount Vernon Fire for the last 20.
Okay.
And private ambulance before that.
All right.
All right, and I'm Bill Dane, and yes, we have been together for 30 years, married for 27, and I work Granite Falls, Snohomish County Fire District 17, and I've been there just under 35 years. And we're here to talk about us, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
Well, this is great. So one thing, I've known you guys for years, but I've never actually known your origin story. So how did Bill and Rebecca become Bill and Rebecca? Because it was in the service that you met.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to start?
Sure. I graduated from Western Washington University and went to work for the Forest Service in 1993 out of Granite Falls. And I that is how I came into EMS in the first place, was I ran across several badly injured and dead people in the forest, and that got me to volunteer at Robe Valley Fire Department. And then I took my EMT class down in Granite Falls. And Bill was one of the instructors for my first responder class. And that is how we met at the fire department.
Okay, and you were a EMT instructor at the time?
First responder instructor. So yeah, so back in the day.
Oh, right.
Where you had to be a first
Washington
responder.
Washington State first responder was just one step above first aid and one step below EMT.
Okay.
And we started all of our volunteers with first responder. And so I was a state instructor for that.
Okay. And what was your role in the fire department at that time?
I was a volunteer lieutenant, battalion chief. And so I had a full-time job outside of the department, but was also one of the lead instructors for both fire and EMS.
Okay. So, Rebecca, that was your entree in the fire department. You became a volunteer at Bill's department.
Yes. I first became a volunteer at Robe Valley.
Okay.
And then when I finished working for the Forest Service, I moved down to Granite Falls and joined that department officially in 1994.
Okay. And then you went from there to becoming a paramedic. When did that part of your path start? Were you guys together as a couple at that time?
Yes. Right. I went to EMT school in 1995 and became a professional EMT in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And back in those days, you had to be an EMT for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And so I started...
Yeah.
No, you had to have 2 years.
2 years experience before you could go to paramedic school.
Yes.
Okay.
Because I started paramedic school in 1996.
Okay. And so what year did you guys get married? Just so I have that.
So I said that I had to be done with paramedic school. So I graduated paramedic school in August of 1998, and we got married in September of 1998.
All right. So you planned a wedding during medic school. That was what you thought was the wise thing to do, was not to get married and have a partner to help you through, but rather to hold off and plan your wedding while you were in paramedic school.
Yes.
That sounds logical.
There was a lot of work to get her through paramedic school. Mm-hmm. So when she started paramedic school, that's when we started dating and figured out. At that time, we actually... we're debating whether I would go to paramedic school or she would go to paramedic school. Mm-hmm. And since I, at that point, was already a full-time firefighter with Granite Falls, there was no, there was really no choice that she would go to paramedic school first and then I would go later.
Okay.
But the career path, was focused on me becoming an officer at the department.
And you were on a track already.
I was, and paramedic school wasn't in that.
Wasn't in that track, okay. Which paramedic school did you go to?
I went to Northwest Medical Training in Vancouver.
In Vancouver. So they call that the battleground class, right?
No.
Oh, that wasn't battleground,
This school was owned by a woman who started her first school in Portland.
Okay.
So there were two different campuses, Portland and Vancouver.
Okay.
And when she sold it off, it went back to Oregon.
Okay.
But the battleground was modeled after that particular school.
Okay. And these are just paramedic training programs. I just never knew that about you. I just never knew that one. So, but I think you were in paramedic school with some of our classmates, weren't you? Or you were just after our classmates? No?
I didn't go to school with any of our coworkers. But a ton of us worked at Rural Metro together.
Okay. And so so you have such a history with so many people we work with that I just kind of think of you moving through life as a cohort.
Jeremy and I were EMTs together in Everett for Shannon Ambulance before it became Rural Metro in 1996.
Okay.
We figured out we've known each other the longest.
Okay.
And then Ryder.
Uh-huh.
And then I think Lee.
Okay. And then Ryder begat Lee, who begat Carl, who begat. Okay.
Yes, all yes.
Right. Okay.
Oh, yeah. So many.
So, but you guys were at the same department, and I think that it's pretty common to have members of the same family, you know, in the field. It's not uncommon, I guess I should say, for people to be married to one another, but it is often uncommon for them to be at the same department. How did you guys manage your early phases of your relationship and getting started and still being at the same department together? How'd that go for you?
Well, interestingly, as soon as I got to paramedic school, it was very difficult for me to continue to volunteer because I had a full-time job at Rural Metro. Mm-hmm. So between going to school and doing all the clinical and didactic and I didn't work. I only worked like my minimum amount of shifts. Mm-hmm. And Bill had become full-time.
Okay.
So we weren't really crossing paths by then.
Okay.
And it wasn't super public. So as far as in station, we were just employees.
Yeah.
And everybody knew, but it wasn't.
Yeah, I think there's a level of professionalism that's easy to accomplish in our world. And it's also easy to ignore. Like you can either do it right and maintain a level of professionalism, or you can make a complete ass out of yourself and your significant other and alienate your coworkers.
Right.
Yes.
That's well said.
Thank you very much.
And we did. We worked diligently to keep our work life totally professional, as we both had goals. We knew our roles at the department and knew what we wanted to do. And we didn't want the perception of the relationship getting in the way of that.
Okay. Now, at some point, some babies entered into the picture. Mm. And that, how do you, I think we can all imagine, listening to you guys, imagine a work-life balance with someone who's an adult, a peer, keeping things on a neutral professional level, establishing boundaries for a relationship, but then also having the pleasure of working with somebody that you care about so much. But that part's pretty interesting because you had two kids.
Right.
While you were each working separate jobs at separate locations and 24-hour
shifts? 24-hour
shifts,
yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I started working for Rural Metro in Tacoma, my first paramedic job in 1998. And we had Laura in 2001.
Okay.
And I actually really had a crisis of spirit.
Oh.
I almost didn't come back to being a medic. I just was so enamored and in love with being a mother. Mm-hmm. And as my maternity leave went on, it was just harder and harder for me to think about going back. Mm-hmm. And then I went back to talk to Dr. Waffle in Tacoma. And so I'm sure you had this maybe. I don't know if you had it in another state. But here in Washington, your first certification cycle for paramedic, you had to get triple everything.
Yes.
So instead of four intubations, you had to have 12.
Yeah.
You had to have a million IVs, which was not a big deal. Well, I was lucky. I was first on in Tacoma with two different departments. So I was supposed to have 36 tubes by the time I finished my first certification. Mm-hmm. And I had 28, mm-hmm. Which is a miracle in and of itself. Well, when I went to see Dr. Waffle about coming back, he doubled it.
Oh.
He doubled the amount that I needed.
Okay.
And it was, it felt insurmountable. I was going to the OR and hanging out and getting maybe one tube a day, and I was having to drive to Tacoma and get childcare, and it was so hard. I lost it. I told Bill I wasn't going to go back, and he was like, no, that's not a thing.
That's not a thing.
We're still paying for that school, and you're going, like, but I did need, like, also my mother said the same thing.
Yeah.
She's like, you're just feeling like that now. You will be so sad if you don't maintain this career. Like, you will kick yourself. Yeah. So I think postpartum emotion, hormones had a lot to do with it also.
Yeah.
But it was a very difficult, it was such a difficult hurdle for me to accomplish. And I look back on it now and I'm so thankful I did it. Mm-hmm. Because this is the thing that I love to do. Yeah. And now that there are no longer children in the house.
Yeah. You've gone full circle there with that.
Yeah.
So.
Right. And we started off with two
in
our relationship because I already had two. Yeah. And so we worked raising them, co-raising them with their mother. And so we had to work that out. And then with her working in Tacoma, it, it added for a 24-hour shift is really 28 to 30 hours for the drive. And so it was a big hill to climb, but we were able to do it because we were focused on one is we had to support the family, and it was the job that I think she was actually made for.
And
Tacoma was the right place at that time. There wasn't a place for single role medic north, so King County, you'd have to go through the Medic One program, so that would have been a whole another year of training. And in Snohomish County, Skagit and Whatcom, well, Skagit County had Medic One, but it was really difficult to get into. Whidbey Island was difficult to get into. It was like you had to be born on the island or something. So Pierce County was the only place, and it really worked out. And you know, I just want to add that through the first pregnancy and through the second, but Rebecca worked through the first pregnancy up into her 8.5 months to where... And it was great. Tacoma Fire never let her touch things. So they wouldn't let her pick up patients, carry her kits, load the patients. All she had to do was calculate drugs and start IVs and intubate. And everything else was done. And it was great because it helped, you know, one, it helped us financially, but it also kept her connected to what being a paramedic. Okay. So it was great.
And how old were Nikki and Bryce at the time when you got together and when you were in paramedic school?
They were 15 and 16 when we got married.
Okay.
Which means they were 2 years younger than that.
Right.
Okay. So they were...
13 and 14.
Right. They weren't car seat kids at that
time.
No.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No.
Well, they were high maintenance teenagers.
Oh my
gosh. I mean, they had, you know,
things
going on.
Right. We lived in Granite Falls, but they actually went to school their entire school career in Marysville.
Okay, that's so a considerable drive.
Drove them every day that they were with us. We were driving back and forth.
Oh my goodness!
To deliver them and then to pick them up until they were both self sufficient and able to drive themselves. So it was probably a good 5 years of. Moving. So that was an addition to 24-hour shifts and working out all of the things that you have to work out when you're first responder families.
So you were brand new and pregnant and had your first baby and you got started in your career. What was the, I know there's a time difference. Is it 4 years between your kids?
Almost three and a half.
3.5 years. Yeah. So was it easier with your second baby?
Was what easier?
Just in general, like life. Did you have it knocked down and figured out, or did you know that you were coming back to the field after?
I knew I was coming back to the field afterwards.
Okay.
And that I did not have the same experience afterwards with number two as I did with number one.
Yeah.
I think it was harder because I had a toddler at home. Mm-hmm. And I was you know, it's tiring to be pregnant, and it's I was just like now, always on the busiest rig down in Tacoma, and we would easily do 16, 17 calls on average per shift, because we were the closest to any given hospital.
Yeah.
No, downtown Tacoma.
All the granny go homes,
right
too.
By their station one, right by Tacoma General Hospital.
Yeah.
Just off of the Children's Hospital there.
So it was easier in that I knew what was coming, but it was, I was tired.
Yeah.
It was tiring. But I had great pregnancies. Mm-hmm. I was never sick. I mean, I was so lucky. And so I worked right. I mean, both of them right up until my due date. Mm-hmm. Laura, actually, I worked 40 weeks with because she was 2 weeks late.
Right. She didn't
and
want to Ellie come into
was,
this world.
Came at 38 weeks, and I think I worked 36 and a half weeks. Like, it was like, so I was super lucky physically. I felt great. Mm-hmm. I felt good enough to work. It was just being home was harder.
Yeah.
Because I was so tired.
Yeah. And at the same time that she's pregnant with your second child, you were at the fire station, the same fire station, but where were you in your career at that point in time? Because a lot of things have evolved in your department.
Yes.
Since
you've been there. Yeah. So at the time, so we had, when I got hired, we had 5 full-time staff, and we were running a department with 40 part-time. So in my role there was the instructor for the part-time. I did most of the recruitment. And then it was still working 24-hour shifts. So, I don't know, I think my first promotion. So when I went to full-time, they drop you back. So then I became a probationary firefighter, even though I was a lieutenant in the volunteer ranks and a battalion chief. I would take a truck home and respond for the district for 7 days straight. And so we had to work around that. But once I got hired, I went down to the bottom again and had to work my way back up. And I
took a huge pay cut. Tell her how much you made the first year.
I can't remember. It was like $20,000.
It was $28,000.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What year was this?
1997.
Seven.
It was awful.
Yeah. Well, it was a non-represented department. Mm-hmm. It's a whole nother part of my career that by hiring me, they gave the staff the ability to request representation. And I think the crew that was there, the full-time staff, they looked at me as the sacrificial lamb. And so I was the charter president. So I went and did all of the work with the state. And I will tell you that my coworkers thought, oh yeah, they're going to fire him. So we're good. We'll get union representation and he'll be out. But nope, that didn't happen. And was able to represent the union for 20 years before I moved into the office, became a chief. So,
all right. And so let's kind of jump ahead to when you became chief, because that was a huge lifestyle change in that you stopped being on 24-hour shifts. Is that correct?
Right. Yes.
And so how did that affect you, Rebecca, when he was suddenly not on 24s? And your kids, of course, were older. But
right.
Well, actually, Bill really struggled on 24-hour shifts because for whatever reason, he could not sleep at the station ever. Mm-hmm. So he would come home after every 24-hour shift completely wasted because he just hadn't slept at all. Mm-hmm. And it was really a challenge. So when Ellie was an infant, we didn't know that she had bad ears. Mm-hmm. And so for the first year of her life, she did not sleep through the night one single time, because as soon as she laid flat, she'd start screaming. Mm-hmm. And so we had a system. If I was going to work the next day, he took care of Ellie all night. Mm-hmm. And if he was going to work the next day, I took care of Ellie all night. Wow. So not only was he not sleeping at work, we were not sleeping at home.
Yeah.
On our days, on our days off. So being put onto 410s was a huge blessing in terms of lifestyle and health.
Health, yeah.
Yeah.
And energy level and mood. Mm. I mean, it felt like everything was really hard there for a while because he did it, of course, but he struggled. Like it was an uphill slog.
And at the time, this is the part that always fascinated me, not having kids, not being on a kid track. Like, my brain was never built that way. I was always fascinated by the fact that you had a whole car devoted to the kids.
Right.
So explain that.
Right. Well, we had to have, because you had to have, when Ellie was born, we had to have two car seats. And because I was a stay-at-home dad on the days that I was there, we had all of these friends that had family on the same track. And actually, there were four families with kids the same age, almost the same time apart. And I would take care of a lot of them. And so we had to have the car ready for when Rebecca drove to work. We'd have to have the family car. And then I could drive to anything because I was only a half a mile away from work. But we always had to have a car set up for the kids.
And so you got a kid car.
Yes.
Yes.
Two car seats in it. No waiting.
Two no cars. Waiting.
Like, you just leave one car, you pick up the kid car. If you had the kids, you had the kid car.
Stroller in the back.
Yeah.
Snacks everywhere.
And for a couple of years, it was the truck.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I can remember when Station 2 was next to the hospital and Rebecca was working. And I brought Laura, Ellie, and Luke and...
Riley.
No.
Riley.
Luke and Hannah. Didn't Hannah and Abby not come? Okay. I had four kids in the truck. So, we had five because there were three in the front and three in the
She's
back.
She's shaking her head no the whole time.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Memories.
There was a bunch of children.
Yes. We drove up and hung out up at,
it was a lot.
At the station in Mount Vernon so she could see the kids because they were, I don't know, long shift or something.
Well, you were bringing her so I could nurse.
Oh, yeah.
I saw the look on your face when you said that. It's okay. You can talk about it.
Yeah.
It's okay.
No.
Whenever possible, he used to bring her up to nurse because I started in Skagit County when she was 3 months old.
Yeah.
And 24 hours is just a long time to go if you're a nursing mother.
Mm-hmm.
And
and that's a whole nother story with the partners that she had. And sometimes up at Station 1 having bottles of pumped milk in the refrigerator.
No, that was me.
That was,
there
was
you go.
Me. That was her. It was the freezer,
right.
To be fair.
Okay.
It was the freezer. Yeah. There was, and once there was an empty bottle underneath the bed and I was doing push-ups and I kind of just looked down at her bed and I'm like, I can't live in this. And I told Rebecca, I remember saying, you seem like a nice person. I think I said, like, you seem like a nice person and I'm sure we're going to get along, but I can't talk to you when you're... I can't talk about this stuff. I just don't have that about me. So that was my start with Rebecca is like, we're going to be fine, but I can't identify with it.
We're going to be fine later.
So, but through the career, through the kids, you know, one of the things that really helped us was the 24-hour shifts. We raised, Nikki and Bryce, and then for the early years of Laura and Ellie, we raised without hardly any child care. Sometimes we'd have crossover care, 2 or 3 hours at the most, but they had a parent home every day. And I think that was the blessing of being in this business. And then just being able to share parenting the way we did. I totally believe it made our kids better. I don't know. They're as good as they're going to be. And I can't go back and think, what would it have been like if one of us was gone more than the other? But
we decided early on, or we realized early on, that marriage isn't 50-50, it's 100-100.
Oh.
And that we consciously decided that there was going to be mommy days and daddy days, but they were going to be as much the same as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you that a lot of couples don't do it that way. Like, a dad would never have other kids over to play. Mm-hmm. Like, we know so many dads that would be like, I don't take care of other people's kids. Are you kidding me? But if I had a play date or if I had scheduled a play date, it didn't matter what day it was on because also my girlfriend's completely...
Right. Yeah.
Trusted Bill.
Yeah.
And also, like, he became an honorary chick, is what they called him.
Okay.
They did call me that.
Because he was one of the moms.
Okay, right. Sure.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was really special because our life was more cohesive that way. Because okay. there wasn't this big discrepancy like, oh, dad doesn't do play dates sure. and dad doesn't go to the park and dad doesn't. It was just life.
Nice.
Yeah. So it was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me think about how the mom can often end up being the disciplinarian and the hard ass. And then dad is, you know, you get to eat anything when dad's around. But when mom's around, you have to eat your vegetables. But you guys set that arrangement and you just knew that. That's a really neat thing. I've never heard you talk about that before.
Yeah.
I did hear you say something recently, though. Is there any truth to truth to it? It's not a big scandal, but anything that that he's got to cook you dinner, is that a thing?
He, okay.
I'll tell it from mine and then you can tell it from yours.
Okay.
So I'm a clean, not a neat freak, but I need things to be clean before I feel relaxed in my house. Mm-hmm. And so there were some years when I would come home and things, you know, there's two small children in the house.
Yeah.
But unfortunately that still in my brain, I would still have to like pick things up and Bill would be like, honey, sit down, relax. And I'm like, I can't. And it didn't put a strain on our marriage so much as I put a strain on myself. And so Bill, in an effort really to support me, like really early on started trying to get the kids to help clean up. Mm-hmm. And I feel kind of bad because I know they're like, we have to be clean for mommy. Like,
yeah.
Somewhere in there, Bill decided that I would not be responsible for dinner on the days that I came home.
Yeah.
Because I was just getting the call volume between what I was doing and between mm-hmm. what Granite Falls was doing was a lot different. Mm-hmm. And so it was just such a kind gift that I didn't have to think about that, mm-hmm. that I could just come home and Bill, no matter what, even if he was at work, he would come home and make dinner.
Oh,
like,
wow.
It's not like he's at home
yeah.
all the time. Like he's working his 410s also at some point and he would still
Come home and make dinner.
It is one of my greatest gifts in our marriage. And he still does it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tries. There are some nights where I come home and say, hey, I'll go get whatever it is you want.
That counts.
It does. But it totally counts. I'm still not thinking about dinner.
It's the only way, especially now. So I've been on day shift for going on 8 years. Mm-hmm. And with the volume, you obviously know that Mount Vernon has, there's not a lot of sleep. And I, for whatever reason, it seems like she gets more than I her fair share. And she comes home exhausted, mm-hmm. right? And with her other passions, teaching Zumba, she has to have that time. And it's nothing to cook. Yeah. It's nothing to keep clean. You know, sometimes I slip.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, for the most part, I think it's the best way I can support her mm-hmm. to keep her, you know, healthy and continue on. I think she's got four years. I think it's five. I think we have to go to 5 years before she can retire or before she will retire. Uh-huh. And so, given that I'm going to be out of there in 9 months, I'm going to do a lot more of this.
So you're on a countdown timer, nine months until your retirement?
Yes.
And then no immediate plans for that. We were talking about this earlier.
No.
That's very nice.
Yeah. One of the things I think that I hope for our future is that we can find a place somewhere north here where Rebecca, we can live out the next 3 to 4 years and she doesn't have the big drive okay. to work. And realistically, I love the community that I'm in, but every street has a story.
Sure.
Right? After you know, 35 years, it's yeah. there's not a street. I go into people's houses that may have bought a house new or, you know, someone I'll know and they're like, oh, what do you think of our house? And I can think of, well, you know, 20 years ago, I worked a code here on the floor
yeah.
Or there was a fire there or these bad things happened over here. And like, that's it's deep,
yeah.
right?
Well, we work in a field where we're never meeting anybody on their best day. They're never their best self when we meet them.
Right.
And then you really don't want to bump into them in your Crocs and jammies when you're running into the grocery store in the middle of the night because you ran out of ice. So just, that's not what you want. And I can just imagine, I did not know that you were thinking about relocating, but of course you've been locked into your location because of course you own the house there. You're the, you're the assistant chief there. So being close to the station, to the department, that's quite a responsibility for you.
And I've been in Granite Falls for 43 years now. And it might be time, but there was a thing that happened to me probably, it was about 20 years ago, where I was with an EMT and we were up at the local grocery store and a woman came by and she looked at me and she broke into tears and she continued on. And the EMT, she looked at me and she goes, "Do you have that effect on all women?" And I was like, "Well, actually, her husband was murdered and I was the first responder." Oh, yeah. On that, and then I testified in two trials to convict the person who had killed him. And anytime she saw me, it would bring that up. And it's like, that is the community I live in. People have those memories, and I trigger those. And sometimes they trigger it for me. So, yeah, at some point, I want to go someplace where I'm not connected to that.
Makes sense. How does it work for you? Is there a benefit, do you think, that you know each other's stressors with regard to those major incidents? Does it help, or do you end up Rebecca taking on Bill's burden, or Bill, do you take on Rebecca's burden as a result?
I don't think either one of us take on the burden, but it is that we deeply empathize with each other, right? So when I have a call, an incident that I am struggling with emotionally, I can go in and I with being able to talk to her and have her relate to know exactly what I'm going through, it makes it easier. It helps, and it helps me kind of pack it away. I think better than I would if I didn't have a partner that worked in the business. And I've known a lot of people. I've got to mentor over the years. We probably had 250 people come through the department in the last, I would say, 20 years that have moved on to full-time work. And I am still friends with several of them. And I know that I've seen marriages fall apart because the partner didn't have the ability to listen to some of the things that we see. And so a firefighter would go home after a really tragic call and need somebody to talk to. And I know that in a couple of cases where spouses have said, "Don't bring that to me. If you can't handle it, don't do the job, but I don't want to share it." I've never had that with her.
Yeah. Also, there's acute trauma, and then there's sort of the buildup that we carry with us. I liken it to, like, I feel like it's just part of the fabric of me. Like, you take people with you or some part of them. And I find Bill always is there to listen. Whatever it is that I need, he knows and does. And I feel like it makes it possible for me to let that trauma go through me instead of get stuck. But also, we've had these moments over the years where, you know, how just something will trigger a memory. And I feel like I'm not crazy. Like, I'm like, "Oh, do you remember the call with the little old lady?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, babe." And I don't have to explain to him why it makes me sad. I don't have to feel defensive for maybe having a cry for a call that happened 14 years ago, or, you know, it's so liberating to just be able to process and grieve or laugh or be mad or whatever it is. And I never feel judged, and I always know that he understands, and also that he knows enough to just let me work it out also. Yeah. Like, there isn't any pressure to get over it or to have it be a certain way, or he's okay when I'm disillusioned with the world or people being unable to adult.
Yeah.
He knows that I'm not a negative person, but I might need a vent.
Yeah.
You know, there's just no judgment on any level about it, which really just, I already said it, I know, but just allows it to wash through me. And I'm not like holding anything in because I feel like I have to be a proper person or not have certain feelings. So, yeah, I would not, I feel extraordinarily lucky that I don't have a buildup of toxic PTSD. That.
Teamwork.
Yeah. Yes. Because, I mean, I've been running calls for 30 years, and many bad things have happened, many tragic things. And I feel like the reason, one, is my makeup, but two, is because of my partner.
Yeah.
And that I am able to process the way that I need to process. No judgment.
How do you both do at handling the idea of the danger that one or the other is in? Because I know that can be really stressful. And you hear something on news or on social media and you realize something's gone down in Skagit County or something's going on in Snohomish County. How do you guys, how have you done with that?
Well, for me, it only came up one time, and that was the Cascade Mall shooting.
Mm-hmm. It actually... Not only did it come up for Bill, it came up for our kids.
Yeah.
Jennifer was working that day too.
Right.
It was the first time that my kids had any realization that work might be dangerous. Because they were watching it on the television. That was so hard. It was hard because that was one of the times that I came home from work feeling completely disillusioned with the human race. Mm-hmm. And my kids just wanted to be like on me and a part of me. Mm-hmm. And I wanted no touch. For maybe the first time in my whole life did I not want to cuddle with my children. And thank God Bill was there to distract them and get them away and interested in something else. And it wasn't one day.
Yeah.
You know, it was a little while.
Yeah.
And it was hard.
Yeah.
It was hard.
Yep.
I think for the most part, we trust each other and we know our levels. And so again, that incident was, it's kind of thrown in our face, right? Mm-hmm. As I literally talked to her about 5 times a day, and we had just spoken on the phone right before that dispatched. We're on the phone, and she said, I think there's something going on at Casablanca Mall. I need to go. And me, at the time, I would do a lot of scanning. I'd scan your radio frequency, and I
Not
turned
radio.
It on. Yeah. Well, everybody does it, right?
It's a scanner.
and I turned it on, and I was legitimately frightened for her safety.
For those who don't know the story, there was an active shooter incident in Skagit County. We've had a couple, but in this particular one, a shooter went into the Macy's store at the Cascade Mall during business hours, right around dinner time, and shot up the Macy's and killed several people. And so, Bill, I don't know if you know this or not, but Rebecca being on that call made that call better for me. Because I was in the store, and it was very strange, and I don't mean to go into this or bring it up, but it was very strange. But we would sit there quietly, not touching anything, not moving, watching to see what was going to happen because the police were still stabilizing the situation. And then all of a sudden, and by the way, flashing lights from the outside, mirror surfaces all over the store, and music still playing. Shopping music still playing. And then all of a sudden, a woman would pop up from nowhere and just run. And we would call her to us, and we would grab her. And we'd take her to the door, and we'd push her out, and I would put her in your wife's hands.
Hmm.
And that, for me, needed to happen because I wasn't leaving my partner. I wasn't leaving the patient still inside. We didn't know what was going on.
Right.
But I was able to put my patient into Rebecca's hands, and I knew that was okay. Yeah. So if you know that. But
well, I didn't know that, and I thank you for sharing the story. Yeah, so. And yeah, it's being able to have people that you trust,
yeah.
And that's exactly what I hear you describing. Yeah. That's how we are with our relationship.
Yeah.
We trust each other, and we trust each other with each other's mm-hmm. trauma
yeah.
and our joy.
Yeah.
Everything that is amazing that happens with her in the business mm-hmm. is shared. So we share everything. I don't know if there's anything we don't share. Our again, joys, our frustrations, traumas, and just. We have a checks and balances thing that most people don't have, and that's a whole nother side of this story, right? It's when I am thinking about stuff that has to do with work, and I need someone to bounce my ideas off of, someone to share, or just especially for medical. A fire, I don't normally go in and say, "Hey, Rebecca, I had this fire, and this is what we did." I'm feeling a little frustrated that I didn't do all of what I needed to do, or maybe something went or wasn't correct. But on all EMS. Mm-hmm. I check in with her and I say, "Hey, I had this kind of call and this is what we did. And I just want to make sure that, is there anything you can think of that I could have done better or my crews could have done better?" However it goes. And I think there's some her way to me too. So we can talk about our professions when we're at home and be able to support each other, mm-hmm. build each other. I truly believe that I am a better first responder because of my wife, because I got so much from her. And right now, I am the head of our medic program, even though I'm not a paramedic.
Right.
And I got the privilege from my board to be able to build the medic program. We're a unique program because we're medic only. Mm-hmm. My paramedics aren't firefighters. Mm-hmm. But when I got the green light, first person I talked to was my wife. Like, what do I need? What's the best equipment? Mm-hmm. Because I had to go through all of that kind of blind.
Yeah.
In the end, when we started interviewing paramedics, we brought her in. She was part of the paramedic interview process, the testing process, and it worked out great. We had other paramedics. We had a doctor that came in and sat in on all these boards. But as far as building the program goes, we were hand in hand in it. Even though at the department, it looks like I was doing most of the work.
Yeah.
I wasn't.
You had behind the scenes, you had a subject matter expert.
I did have a subject matter expert, and it was amazing. And I think everything that we've done so far has made an exceptional program in our county. And it's got a big future. And again, we're still the only program like ours north of King County.
And most of the people, if they listen to the show, know that Mount Vernon's fire department adopted the paramedic program. They adopted paramedics from the county-based paramedic program, and it broke up. And so Rebecca and I are both of those paramedics. So then you had your own subject matter expert for kind of getting indoctrinated or onboarded into the fire system. How did that go for you?
Absolutely. Well, it was important because Bill was actually promoted the same year that we started. So we both started a new phase of our career at the same time, us in the fire department, Bill in the office. And even though I had been on a fire department many, many years, I mean, it had been since 2000, mm-hmm. since I had been, I sort of forgot what that was like, or I don't know. I think I just was rusty about, we didn't have lieutenants or captains, or we were so self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have to answer to really anybody. And even when we had MSOs, we didn't answer to the MSOs. They just sort of did all of, made sure that everything ran smoothly. So I did a lot of getting support and advice from Bill about my captain, my battalion officer, what's appropriate to take to my captain and what's not. And, it was helpful.
Yeah.
I wanted to circle back too about trusting each other. Mm-hmm. You said it, but in a different way, something that I've taken very seriously especially since becoming a parent is my safety at work. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to put into words, but Bill trusts me to be my absolute safest at work, like on so many levels, mm-hmm. like driving, walking up to strange doors in the dark. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, not blocking exits when patients are agitated. Yeah. I mean, like every single tool that's available to us to be safe, I feel like I am always trying to be at the peak of, you know, awareness and safety, because I have always wanted to go back home.
Yeah.
Like it is so important to me to make it back home safely. And we have taught each other a lot of tricks about that over the years. And I've brought times that I have failed, you know, like I was like, oh, I didn't see that coming, mm-hmm. you know, and tried to really learn from situations or getting decked by little old ladies, yeah. whatever.
Why do they hit?
So that is another thing about trusting each other and yeah. being safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So we're this year, Rebecca, you've been with Mount Vernon. It's heading on 6 years.
Yes.
Because it was the start of 2019 and mm-hmm. it's almost 2026. And Bill, you have been in the office then for that many years.
Yep.
You're on a 9-month countdown.
9 months.
For retirement. And Rebecca, you're on a 4 to 5 is what he was just.
4.5, actually.
4.5. Okay.
Sure. August of 2030.
Oh, okay.
Because August is when we became union. We got our LEF benefits.
Got our LEF benefits. Okay. And that's when you reach the amount of years.
25.
You're 25 years.
Yeah.
Okay. In LEF?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I do not do that math well at all because I don't know
You'd
where I'd
be the same.
I'd be the same. Yeah. Okay. While your next and her next are starting at different levels, obviously you're a married couple. You have been doing this for so long. So no matter what's next for you as Bill retires, what's next for the two of you?
That is, you know, that's the mystery. It makes it great. I think about retirement and it frightens me mm-hmm. because I can't see my day, mm-hmm. right? So I know what we're doing all the time. And that includes vacationing and all, because we plan around our two careers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we always plan a year in advance in terms of picking vacation.
Oh, yeah. You got to pick your schedule a year in advance. Absolutely.
Right. And starting next July, mm-hmm. I don't have that. And so there's no structure beyond that. And I know so many people who have planned out and they know, oh, we're going to do this and this and this. I don't have hobbies. Mm-hmm. I have one. And that, you know, is playing bagpipes.
It's playing bagpipes, yeah.
That's it. And most of my playing bagpipes is at funerals. So that's not something
it's
you want
to plan
out.
It's not a cheerful future to plan.
No, no. So, it is scary. But the bonus is... and we just experienced this. So we were just on vacation, went to Colorado Springs, unfortunately for the Fallen Firefighters
right,
Memorial.
You played bagpipes at the Fallen Firefighters Memorial. Yeah. Thank you for doing that. And thank you for the flags. That was,
And then we drove down to Santa Fe and drove back, and what an amazing time. And so what I realized, and I think I just said, is we travel well together. Mm-hmm. And so it's not going to be hard to be retired mm-hmm. and not have a plan every day for what we need to do, because spending time with Rebecca is amazing. One of the things that, and you just said this to a friend of ours not too long ago, it's in our first 20 years of marriage, realistically, we look at it and we say, we were together for 10 years, right? Because we were on 24-hour shifts. So I'm gone 10 days a month. She was gone 9 days a month. And so that gave us, you know, 10 to 11 days right. together. And a lot of that is, especially after the babies, I can remember every day coming home and taking that baby and putting it on my chest and sleeping for 2 hours on the couch, mm-hmm. Because we had to recuperate. So even that, but I think it made our relationship stronger, and it gives me, you know, I'm excited for just being able to spend time with each other, go do the things that we can find that we enjoy, going to Hawaii, going, you know, but traveling and just sharing and doing Zumba. We'll go do Zumba everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Rebecca, what do you hope for Bill? You don't have to like plan his honey-do list or anything like that, but what do you hope for Bill as he reaches July of next year? What are you hoping for both of you?
One thing I guess I always hope for everybody in our business that retires is that it's such an all-consuming thing that we do, and people often identify themselves more holistically with the job than, say, I don't know, somebody who does, you know, some job that's not 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always, I worry about our friends, and I have a tiny little worry about Bill, not huge, but that once you retire, that there's like this big empty void that feels sad and hard to deal with because you're not getting to do the passionate thing that mm-hmm. you love to do. And like you say that, you know, what you're going to work and you're going to do something that feels important or that feels like it is your secret superpower.
Mm-hmm.
So one, I hope and pray that, Bill is able to process that mm-hmm. gracefully and yeah, that you find some new hobbies.
Yeah.
I mean, he does, bagpiping is great, but it doesn't take up a ton of time.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
And I hope that you find things that you love to do that you just haven't had time to do.
Yeah. I'll say that the closer I get, and I'm trying physically to separate myself from the job when I'm not there. And then I have, you know, today is my day off. I've spent hours working in different segments of the job. 2 weeks ago, I got home from work and I have a car, an SUV that I take on my fire SUV. And I pulled in the driveway and we dispatched on a fire that was about 2 miles down the road from my house. And I thought, well, you know, I might as well. And so I went and worked with the crews, with another battalion chief from another agency, and we just worked seamlessly. We were there for two hours about, got the fire put out, took care of the residents, took care of all the firefighters, and on my way back home, I thought, I can't not do this.
Yeah. That's hard.
Yeah, it is. I just, the interactions, the time that you have when you're on an incident, and some of the incidents, you go to a CPR in progress, you go to just a sick person, somebody who, and I think everybody that listens to you will understand what a frequent flyer is. Mm-hmm. But they're all tangible parts of what we do. And this idea that I won't have anything to do with that anymore is difficult. Going and counseling somebody that how their lifestyle choices need to be different so that they can have a better life and they're not dependent on the fire department or EMS to come and help them every day. It's mind-boggling. And the more I sit here and talk to you about it, the sadder I get.
Yeah.
That it's coming to a close.
Well, we'll try and perk things up here a little bit. I think about identity and how my identity is wrapped up in this job. And I think about how I started the job with the intention that my identity would be wrapped up in it. Like, this is how I identify myself. If an alien were to land in front of me and were to say, "What are you?" I would say I'm a paramedic. I wouldn't say I'm a human. I wouldn't say I'm female. I wouldn't say an earthling. I wouldn't say an American. It starts with paramedic. And over the years, then you add on the other roles. So now I'm a paramedic firefighter. I can't say firefighter paramedic. My mother does not like that. So I have to say paramedic firefighter, not firefighter paramedic. But you know, you think of all the ways that you define yourself in your roles, but still today, if the alien landed in front of me and said, "What are you?" I'm like, paramedic. it just starts that way. And to imagine ahead for my retirement, because I am eligible now, I can go at any time, and I'm not really sure when it's going to happen, because, you know, my life is still, it's still being written. It's not, I haven't figured that out yet. I do think about that, losing that sense of identity, and what do I tell that freaking alien when they do land and ask me. So. All right, so we're at the end, and so I'm just going to ask you guys this. It's a bit of a sandbag question, but I wasn't sure if you'd get there or not. But you guys have been together 27 years. You just celebrated your anniversary. Congratulations. I would love to know what it was that made you know, and what it was that made you know that this was the right match. What it was that either attracted you or made you say, like, that's the moment, this is the person. They both start giggling.
Yeah.
I will tell you my story.
Okay.
It's a little embarrassing.
That is perfect. Ratings. Okay.
Because it was love at first sight.
Oh.
And I feel really weird saying that.
That's okay.
But I walked into the fire department to talk to the chief about something, and Bill was standing in the radio room, and I walked past him, and I stopped, and he's like, hi. I was like, hi, can I help you? I'm looking for the chief. He's right this way. And I knew in my heart in that moment I was going to marry that person.
Wow.
And I, yeah.
And you've told him the story. Like, he's not learning this.
Oh, yeah.
No,
he knows.
I've heard the story. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I actually went home and wrote his last name behind my first name on a napkin and then threw it away.
Oh.
He might not know that part.
I didn't know that part.
Okay. No. All right.
And then I was like, blah, though.
Yeah. All right. How about you, Bill? And I'm sorry you have to compete with that, because that's a hard
one. No, I can't compete with that. When we got to know each other, she is an amazing person. But I do remember the first moment that I was like, okay, I'm gonna be with this woman. And it had to do at the station. And it was really weird because it was toward the end of your EMT school. And Rebecca was quite a specimen back then. I referred to her. She's blushing now, but
she's beet red right
the
now.
The tree hugging nut cruncher.
Nut crunching, Birkenstock wearing hippie, and one day she came into the station and she was wearing these African print baggy pants, and one of the legs had a tear that went all the way past the knee, and underneath she had light gray thermal long underwear. She had this giant sweater, and at the time her hair was huge, just outrageous curly giant hair, and she would wash her hair all the time with henna, and so it was like this really deep blood red. And in the radio room again, there's a little tiny room in the fire station, and she was reaching to put a key back in a key box, and she reached past me, and we were face to face, and I was like, oh, wow. This is something I hadn't seen. I don't know why I haven't seen this person and how amazing and beautiful she is, but that's it. Done deal.
Do you still have those pants? You could.
They might be in her cedar chest.
They might be in my cedar chest.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes. That would be wild. Probably
also,
have the sweater.
Something magical about our relationship really early on was that Bill immediately trusted me on scene. Mm-hmm. Like, I started as a first responder. He was an EMT. And we rarely had to talk. Mm-hmm. We could just work.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was one of the very one or two women on the department at the time. And I felt like most of the other people that worked there who were men regarded me as Well, and I was new, to be fair, but like new chick,
yeah.
unknown. Yeah. I don't like. I felt like I didn't. I had to work really hard to earn their trust mm-hmm. and to show myself as competent, mm-hmm. probably over and above what other people might have to show as
sure.
competency.
I'm familiar with
but,
the feeling.
But immediately, yeah, Bill. But immediately, I felt like Bill trusted me to do my job. And yeah. that he didn't have to be overseeing me, that we just both worked side by side so fast.
Yeah.
And whether it was fire or EMS, man, we were like, it was so cool. I was yeah. like, oh. And well, then I went on in my career and found out that not all partners are like that.
No.
Yeah.
We actually, there are two times that I can remember where her and I took a fire engine to a fire. Uh-huh. By ourselves, so the Fiero in the shop, and went in. So I was the driver operator, and she'd extend the hose line, and then she'd get her SB on. She was ready to go as soon as I sent water to the nozzle, and then I would get all packed up and on the one with the burning Fiero in the shop, and then we went in, and then somebody else would show up, and they would start working. But just that was before the whole two in two out thing.
Yeah.
And then over there by the soccer fields, the van fire.
That
same
I was
engine.
Burn a lot of cars.
Same yeah. engine. Same. Yeah, just the two of us, and out.
But
on a
I
small
had become part, a driver operator, so I was pumping the engine that
very
time.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very nice.
But yeah, little things. Those are memories that will hold out. There's so much. Yeah, probably the biggest was we had this just as she ended EMT school. There was a CPR in progress in our district, and it was a mom of three small children, and we went in. I was actually the officer running the scene, and Rebecca and two of her classmates came in. Oh, were you in paramedic school?
No, we literally had just gotten
EMT
school. Had driven back from EMT school
right.
in the department vehicle and walked into the station.
So this poor
as it
person
turned out.
Had some really bad it's always bad, but bad lung cancer, and she was hemorrhaging in her lungs, and so she had vomited during this and literally covered Rebecca and three of our firefighters in this black bile vomit. And I remember going
tissue.
and working with her to clean all this up and find I went in and found clothes in the station so she could change and get showered and stuff before she went home, and it was, you know, those are just those weird things that mm-hmm. you know through our lives are part where we're partnered in that, right? It's like it's gross.
Yeah.
And of course
but you're there to pick the matter out of her hair.
Literally.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
It is to this day the most graphic, horrible code I have ever been
wow.
on. Ever.
Wow.
It was.
Yeah. But we were able to take care of each other.
Yeah.
Right.
That's really great. Okay. So projecting ahead, let's go 20 years in the future. You guys have both retired and you've figured out what you want to do and you've traveled and things like that. What couple are you going to be at the nursing home?
We're going to be dancing in the living room.
Okay.
All right.
Absolutely.
Is there going to be music playing? You're just going to dance?
Oh, no. She'll have
either
Zumba.
Way, but probably okay. music.
Oh, like Zumba. You guys are going to be Zumba dancing.
A cumbia? No, yeah. What's our dance?
A bachata.
A bachata. We did that today.
Okay.
I went to support her or to help or not to be a part of her class.
Okay.
She had 25 amazing people in her class, and we have a little bachata that we do together.
Okay.
And yeah.
Bill comes up and dances with me.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
The ladies.
You like
it.
His bachata?
I do.
Great.
Wow.
Well, I'm going to end it here because
note.
I know you guys can get very suggestive if we keep going down the Latin dances. So
yes.
But Bill and Rebecca, this was a genuine pleasure. And I appreciate you so much coming on and just sharing what a marriage in this field can look like.
Thank you.